Who's the guy at the house?
It's my Uncle David. He's got a black belt. We call him Killer.
Hiroshima.
Well, hello, Jellyheads, and welcome to another exciting episode of Know Your Turns at the Drive-In. I'm your host, Dave, with my co-host...
Lucas Wilson.
Hey, Lucas, hey, how you doing?
How's it going? We're on another 90s adventure.
We're talking about 90s movies.
Yeah. No way.
Specifically movies that we watched in the 90s.
Whoa. Extreme. Actually, this movie's not extreme
this
at all.
This is really hard. No, this is like a very pastoral film.
I wish I could do New Zealand accent.
Ah, is that one of those accents you envy? It's like if you could have an accent, like what's your top three?
Oh man, I mean, yeah, Australian New Zealand accents—they're pretty sexy.
Okay, so it's not for you. I guess I should have asked which accent would you rather date? Top three. What are your top three dating accents?
I haven't thought about too many other accents, but
let's look at the accent libido of Lucas Wilson.
The Australian accent's pretty good. I find the Irish is pretty fun. I did get quite accustomed to the German accent because of a certain individual that I dated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess if I was going to pick an accent for a girl I would be into, Irish is probably up there in the top three. Probably number one.
Yeah, Irish and Australian would definitely get me. Anyway, why are we talking about that? Well, our protagonist is New Zealand. Is Kiwi?
Kiwi. And if I remember my death proof, it's like you never call a Kiwi an Aussie.
No. Two totally different countries. One is full of tons of creatures that want to kill you. The other one has no harmful creatures on it.
Really? I actually don't know that much about New Zealand.
That's what I've heard, is New Zealand is like opposite Australia.
Okay, so jumping the gun, we haven't even mentioned what we're revealing yet, but the star of this film, Anna Paquin, her character is like her dad's Canadian, but she was living with her mother in New Zealand.
Yes.
Anna Paquin herself was born in Canada, but raised in New Zealand.
Oh, so this is, wow, her life story.
Yeah, well, the whole true story aspect of this film... Not really. It's more than loose interpretation. It's like there are people who are doing experiments with birds to see if they could get them to follow them and migrate. And the characters in this film are completely fabricated.
Oh, so the part that's semi-true is the one about getting birds to fly south when they've been raised in captivity.
Right. Imprinting on the birds.
That's it. Okay. That's it. So that's more of an inspiration than a true story.
Right.
They didn't put true story on any of the material, did they?
I think they might have because I distinctly remember when I was a kid watching this that it said based on a true story. And since we're already into talking about, let's just say we're talking about Fly Away Home.
At 14, she came from halfway around the world to live on her father's farm.
Make it just like you remember it.
I don't.
You don't what?
Remember.
He was a dreamer who didn't remember what it meant to be a dad.
I'm gonna be in the shop a lot.
You're not a baby. You don't have to hold my hand.
It seemed like nothing could ever make them a family.
Hi.
This is Susan. She's a friend of mine.
Excuse me.
Until one day...
Hey, what do you think you're doing? No!
An amazing adventure was born.
Can I keep him?
Sure.
Hey, guys, Mom. Hey,
it's called imprinting. Amy was the first thing they saw when they were born, so they think she's their mother.
That one's fluffy, and that one's grubby.
See, the problem with your birds is they're going to want to migrate south, and they need someone to show them how.
Froggy! Froggy!
They were orphans.
Put them down.
All domestically raised geese have to be rendered flightless.
No! What are you doing? Stop it!
Stay off of my place!
Who needed a mother to teach them.
You gotta feed them every 2 hours, and you're not allowed to put them outside.
Amy!
Are you sure you can handle this?
And a father to show them the way.
Suppose I built an aircraft and then taught Amy how to fly it.
It's a great idea. You know, birds follow me, I follow you, we all go south.
Together, they charted a course.
Let's go to the right. It's all you, Amy.
Tested their wings. And took to the skies. From the director of The Black Stallion.
Come in, Mama Goose.
Hello, Papa Goose.
Comes an incredible journey for anyone who's ever had a dream.
Dad, they're really flying with me.
And the courage to make it fly. Jeff Daniels, Academy Award winner Anna Paquin. Fly Away Home.
So yes, this movie came out in 1996, and I just want to read the tagline for this film. You know, most movies have pretty silly taglines, but this one's kind of like a description of the film, which is I find odd in its own way. A family of orphaned geese who lost their way. A 14-year-old kid who will lead them home. To achieve the incredible, you have to attempt the impossible. That's kind of meaning. That last line is kind of meaningless.
What was the last line?
It's just one of those. To achieve the incredible, you must attempt the impossible. Complete meaningless crap. That doesn't mean a damn thing.
I mean, also, aren't the geese, like, already home? But they just need to know where to go for their summer home?
They're their winter home. They have to fly south for the winter.
Yeah, that's right.
Because this is set in Canada. These are Canadian geese.
They are. Which are the only geese I know. And it threw me off when I was in Germany. And I saw these birds that looked familiar, but they looked totally different. And I was like, what is that? And they're like, that's a goose. And I'm like, that's right. Not all geese look like the ones I'm used to. That's a
got German. A world traveler here, folks.
That's a German goose.
He's gonna bring it up whenever he can.
You know, I went that one time to Germany, and now I'm a world traveler. I know the world. There's a goose. Geese come in different stripes.
Okay, I need to recover myself. The interesting thing about the true story aspect, though, is that the people who were doing the experiments with the geese, they actually provided the birds for the film and the aircraft.
Oh.
That was part of their experimenting.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's why Jeff Daniels' character has a bunch of like random crap lying around. I think it was theirs.
He's a bit of a... His character is an artist, for those who don't know. He's a sculptor. And he has a lot of random thing.
There's a giant metal dragon in his shed. You see it once. No way in hell did they build a giant metal dragon for one 10-second scene.
Well, weren't they working on that the whole... Like, that was the project he was in the middle of. But then, like, they just kind of ignore it halfway through the movie that it's there.
Like a kids' movie where at one point it mentions where the father works and it's not really important, so they never bring it up again.
Yeah. What's more important
common thing
is
to
that
do.
Spaceship they show once and then...
Yeah, doesn't he sell it for some money to get to work on this more?
Yeah, it looks like he sold it to like some Japanese businessman or something. But
yeah,
I remember
no
it,
idea what was going on.
I remembered it in my mind that he sold it to the government. I thought those two guys were like government agents.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, I remember distinctly seeing this as a kid, but I, like, remembered nothing about it.
This movie stuck in my mind. It's just different.
It is definitely distinctly different than most films I would have watched as a kid. It's, like I said, the pacing of it, the style of filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, even today, when we were watching it, it was like, what style of filmmaking is this? Because it's semi-documentary style. It feels like stuff they would have done in the 70s after Easy Rider came out, you know?
This almost feels like it's a movie. Now that you told me that about the people had a hand in this movie, that it was like a promotional movie for their research.
Probably, although they wrote a book first in the movies, and then...
But which one's going to catch fire more?
Yeah, I guess so.
Family-friendly tale in the theaters about a girl and her dad flying cross-country with geese? Or a book about research?
Actually, funny thing, the release of this movie was delayed slightly, because at the time there was a father and daughter, like a 7-year-old daughter, in a small light aircraft, like the ones you see in the film, who crashed and died.
Oh, okay.
They were trying to do some kind of cross-country trip in the thing, and they crashed and died.
Okay.
So they delayed the release of the film because of that. Because it was in the news, and it would have seemed awkward.
Did that happen to Spider-Man?
Because with 9/11?
Yeah.
They had to go back and take the World Trade Center out of the movie?
Yeah,
things happen in the real world, and sometimes you make a movie that makes you feel a little awkward about what's happening in the real world. Those are always interesting moments, I find.
Yeah.
Like, the most recent one is the... Brad and Angelina breaking up, and then Brad Pitt's in a movie about where he suspects his wife is a spy.
Is that the Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie?
No, that's where they're both spies.
Well, I thought they were like...
And that's comical. And that came out like freaking years ago, man.
Are you talking about the movie Allies?
Allies, yes.
Yeah. Okay, that World War II thing. Anyway, should we discuss, describe what this movie is? Like, I don't know if the audience member that may be just going through episodes and they're not clicking on this because Fly Away Home, I remember that, but they're just going through.
Well, we've talked a little bit about it, but there's this little girl in New Zealand, and her and her mom get into this car accident, and the mom dies. The father, who has really been absent from her life, picks her up and takes her back to his home in Canada. And she's having a really hard time adjusting. Her father is like somewhat of an environmentalist. They're living out in the country. And there's a building development that's going to encroach on his property that he's fighting. And they end up coming in with bulldozers and knocking down a bunch of trees. She goes out and looks around and finds these goose eggs, which she takes back. I mean, it's not light about this. This girl was actually kind of suicidally depressed, and she was not connecting with her father at all. But then she finds these goose eggs, and gets them to hatch, and she starts raising these geese. Then there's this problem where it's like the government forest ranger or whatever. I don't know what his character is.
Yeah, whatever, they made up a law in Canada, or there's a law in Canada where if you have captured geese raised in domesticity, that they cannot be let free because of disease.
Yeah, because they don't know where to go. They fly into power line. It seemed like a bunch of crap. It seemed like someone who made this film had a political axe to grind and weren't like very exacting about where they were swinging that axe.
Which, yeah, because the guy that they made as like the first antagonist was on their side, right?
About
the environmental issues.
The environmental issues about tearing down part of the forest to put in this development. It's like he cared about animals, but then he was like really like Nazi-ish about enforcing the laws.
He broke and entered and stole the geese.
To clip their wings.
He kidnapped him and brought him to like the animal shelter, whatever he worked at.
Yep. Wow, because I said Nazi-ish about enforcing the laws, and then the fact that they were kidnapped and put in cages and brought to this facility, it's drawing some very... I want to avoid those connotations right now.
The Gestapo.
Gestapo, father, goddamn.
I'm sorry.
You bad. Brilliant bastard.
That's what he was. That's what he was.
Okay. Moving past it. So, because the geese were raised domestically, they didn't have other geese to teach them how to fly south for the winter. And this gives Jeff Daniels' character the idea of, like, being able to connect to his daughter through teaching the geese how to fly using small aircraft. And yep. Then they do that, kind of break international laws until they become a media sensation, which happens very quickly. You know, once they cross the border from Canada to America.
They land at an airbase.
Yeah.
And the general's just like, hey! Finger guns and lets them go.
Yeah, he is. It's like, what did you think you were doing? And it's like, well, we had to do this. And it's like, well, you know what? You're all right. Come on. Let's take pictures.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was, they land there and they, like, fighter jets are being scrambled to, like, go after them, and they land. And then the general's, like, cussing them out. It's like, you sent two of my pilots, you know, emotionally back, and you're breaking on these international laws. You didn't do all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, like, and they landed at a military airbase, like, in the United States.
Well, to be fair, when he said you set back my pilots emotionally, he wasn't talking about, like, emotional damage. He was talking about the pilots went, oh, look at the geese. They're cute. It's like... You turned the clock back, so now they're acting like children.
Yeah. So but then all of a sudden he's just like, but how about getting you guys on your way?
Yep. It was
completely unearned.
Yeah. But a lot of this movie, a lot of the emotional beats are completely unearned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very artificial.
Sorry, anyone who grew... I liked this one as a kid, but watching it as an adult, it's just like, man, it does not earn these moments. It's like any time where there's opportunities for things to get deeper or more intense, it just kind of skirts by it. Just be like, here's some more footage of birds flying around, you know?
Like, the relationship between her and her father and then getting the geese to Florida are enough. You don't have to create this weird environmental thing. You don't have to, like, make a bad guy out of the forest ranger and then all of a sudden, because he's gone, insert this developer out of nowhere that you have to beat. That does not need to be there. Like,
right, that's what we were talking about with the weird political axe this guy has to grind. The writer or director, it's just like, all this crap doesn't need to be there.
You could take that out and then write a really compelling story about a father and daughter reconnecting through the channel that is these geese.
And are you kidding me with the actors you got? You got Jeff Daniels. Great actor, very versatile actor. He had just come from doing Dumb and Dumber, but he could do anything. He could do comedy, drama, action films. He could do anything. And you have Anna Paquin, who's I really haven't seen her outside of the X-Men films in this, but decent actress. She's actually pretty good in this. I think you could have gotten a really good performance out of that if you had stuck with this relationship developing. And not had all this convoluted nonsense.
Yeah, somebody really wanted to make a geese rescue movie and didn't care about that part of the story so much. Which is unfortunate. Which almost puts this movie in the category of, like, movies that deserve a remake.
Really? You think this would deserve a remake?
I don't know. It feels like somebody dropped the ball. And I'm seeing potential here for a really heart-touching family film. I mean, it already is, but it could be so much better, you know?
Hmm. Yeah.
It's not.
And it really does need a poster that rips. Yeah. It really does need a poster that doesn't rip off E.T. Have you seen the poster? You can't look at that poster and not think of E.T.
Let me see. Oh, yeah. That totally rips off E.T. Yeah. That's just her in front of the setting sun.
I guess, with the geese falling behind her, but yeah. It totally looks like E.T., doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But what's weird is this director had a directed by a Carol Ballard, a guy named Carol.
Okay.
And he had a thing. He doesn't direct many films. He doesn't do too much work. It seems like there's a list of quotes from him on IMDb, and it seems like he has some real problems with like the Hollywood system.
Okay.
So he would make a film like sometimes like only one or two a decade, right?
Okay.
But animal films. He did. It's like a guy has a short list of films and a couple animal films in there. His first film was The Black Stallion from 1979. Another film he made was Never Cry Wolf. Before this, it didn't have animals in it. I'm guessing it's not explicitly about animals, but it was called Wind, and it was about a guy in a boat or something. I don't know. I only glanced at it, but it seemed like it was done more like documentary style too. But he was a classmate friend at UCLA of Francis Ford Coppola.
Okay.
And Coppola actually produced Black Stallion, his first film. But and then his last film was in 2005, and it was called Duma, and it was about an orphan cheetah befriending a boy in South Africa. So it's like this.
I feel like I remember that.
Did you see Duma?
I don't think I saw it, but I remember the commercials for it. Like, I'm looking at the pictures here on IMDb, and it looks familiar.
But it's like the director has to have a thing about animal movies because he does too many of them to not have that be a thing of his, you know? I'm surprised he didn't do Homeward Bound. But I guess it was too mass market for him, you know? He's got to do these like semi-serious, semi-documentary style film. Make UCLA proud, right?
He's got
nothing so
thing.
Commercial as Homeward Bound. It's always interesting, or a little weird, maybe, when you go on to a... It's like, oh, who directed this film? And they look at their other films, and it's like a lot of other films that are kind of like this film. I don't always know what to make of that, you know? And sometimes it's a genre thing. A lot of people get stuck in genre, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this person makes a bunch of horror films. This person makes a bunch of comedies, you know? Those two specifically are genres that people can get stuck in, for sure. And then the screenwriter, actually interesting. His other credits include things like Saving Private Ryan and Thor, The Dark World.
Wait, who?
And The Patriot. Robert Rodat.
Okay, I thought you were still talking about Carol.
No.
Okay, the guy that wrote...
The writer. The guy that wrote the screenplay.
He wrote Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. He hasn't written too many movies.
No, not too many.
He's
not very prolific, but...
ton of work for... Well, he's only written one episode of Falling Skies, but I guess he's listed as creator, so I guess he oversaw that show?
I guess so. But yeah, it's like... I don't know. It's like if I'd looked up these credits beforehand and then watched this movie, I might have expected something more, you know. As it is, I was like looking at it and going, "Oh, this is only all right," you know. This,
yeah, it's not a bad movie. And I think if I was just like, you know, Joe Everyman, I probably wouldn't care. But for someone like us, I just see lost opportunities in certain areas.
Well, let's get talking about these actors now. You've got Jeff Daniels, who we've already said, very versatile actor. But we also have Anna Paquin, a very young Anna Paquin. She'd only been in two movies, kind of you'd say before this, although the one was released the same year as Fly Away Home. And that was a Jane Eyre adaptation. She was also in The Piano, 1993 film. And I believe it was a New Zealand production, too. So she was making these films in New Zealand. And then this was, I don't know, was this more of an American film? I guess you'd say so.
A Canadian film?
Was it a Canadian film or was it an American
film? Where was it made,
film?
Man? Who made it, Dave? Who made it?
You know, I never actually thought to look that up.
Country, USA, English, language, English, shot in Napa Valley, California.
So it's not shot in Canada.
Who's the production company? Columbia. American.
Well, you know, Anna Paquin would go on to be in the X-Men films and True Blood, which creates this awkwardness for anyone who's seen True Blood and goes back and watches this. Because you see a lot of her in True Blood, let's say. A whole lot of her. That is just kind of awkward when you, isn't it? When you see a child actress, it's like, oh, I just remember her in this film where she's a child. And then,
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. Explain more. Come on, what are you talking about?
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Nah, Dave. Come on, man.
So you don't feel awkward about this at all?
Awkward about what? What are you getting at? What is it about True Blood?
That you're so gonna make me explicitly say it?
I'm just trying to make you uncomfortable, Dave.
Well, she's nude in the film, in the TV show. She appears nude. And I've told this to people, you know, it's like, did you ever see some friends of ours who watched True Blood? It's like, I said, did you ever see Fly Away Home? And they were like, oh, yes, I watched that many times growing up. And it's like, do you realize that's Anna Paquin? And they were like, it is? Oh, and it's like, you're thinking about True Blood. They're like, yes. But it gets better, Lucas. You see, Anna Paquin and Jeff Daniels got to star again in a film together 10 years later and had a sex scene.
What? 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 No!
That was my reaction!
No! 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 No!
Isn't that weird? That's beyond weird to me.
Ugh. Like, I can't even think. It's like that little girl has no idea. The man playing her father, she is going to pretend to have sex with sometime in the future. That's really fucking weird.
Now, they're not actually related.
I know.
They're actors.
But she's like 12?
Like 14.
14?
Yeah, it's unsettling. It's if I was making a film and I found out that two of my actors had previously worked together and one was playing the parent of the other, and in this film it was scripted for them to have an intimate scene, I'd be like, no, you gotta recast.
So weird.
Yeah, and apparently they talked about how it was awkward. Really? And Jeff Daniels said in an interview, they were like, yeah, we just tried not to think about, you know, geese. Oh, that does mess with you, doesn't it, though?
It does. Like,
that was one of those things where I found that out and I was really crossing my fingers hoping you didn't read the trivia on this movie.
I did not.
Because I wanted to drop that on you and just get your reaction. And I did. Ugh. Oh, by the way, that film, if anyone actually wants to see this film, where they have an intimate scene together, it's called...
You weirdos.
The film, I'd never heard of it before, it's called The Squid and the Whale, 2005. I know, it sounds like an animated film. It isn't. It's live action, and we get to see Jeff Daniels and Anna Paquin get into some live action. But yes,
right.
As I was saying, moving on to less awkward territory... You know, the guy who played the Forest Ranger Nazi, Jeremy Ratchford, he's basically the film's only antagonist. There's a guy who shows up at the end.
The land developer at the end, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, whatever. This guy is a recurring antagonist, I guess you'd say. He has a connection to the X-Men himself.
Okay.
In a TV movie from 1996 that I did not even know existed until now, called Generation X.
This was an X-Men thing?
Yes, it was an X-Men thing.
Hmm. Okay.
And he also did the voice of Banshee in the 90s X-Men cartoon. who's as well. But he also
who's Banshee?
It's an X-Men.
I thought you would know.
He's the Irish X-Men.
Okay.
The Irish
X-Men. He's a character who has like this loud scream, sonic booms sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did the voice of the character, and then in 1996 they made a TV movie where he actually played the character, which is interesting. I don't know if there's any other times that that's happened where there was an animated character, and then there was a live action version, and the person who did the voice did the live action version. But I looked this thing up online, and my God, it is horrendous. Like, take the worst episode of the Power Rangers looks better than this TV movie.
That's unfortunate. When was it?
96.
Come on, guys. It's called X what?
Generation X. There was a comic book called Generation X, too, at the time, and this was sort of the a film adaptation of that. It was very 90s hip. Let's just say that.
The actor's name was?
Jeremy Ratchford.
Generation. He's done a lot.
Oh, yeah, he's done a lot, but who cares? He was in this X-Men thing that was really weird. But, yeah, I looked at, I was like, oh, I kind of want to see this. Just wonder what it's like. And it's, I looked up, and it was so horrendous. I was like, no, I couldn't do this to myself. I cannot waste the energy of my life on that film.
Why not, Dave?
I'm already wasting it on this podcast. But there's one scene in this film that stood out to me, though. Okay. Not Generation X, but Fly Away Home. We're back on the movie we're supposed to be discussing. And that's before she finds the geese and she feels lost at this this house. There's this scene where she's just sitting in the middle of a field and you see the house in the background. And she's just sitting on the ground in the middle of the field. Almost feels like a scene from a Terrence Malick film. That probably doesn't mean much to you, Lucas, but someone out there will understand, hopefully.
Okay.
He's done some, let's just say, really well shot, but from what I hear, kind of pretentious films. I've only seen Badlands.
I felt like this was leading to something.
It is. That scene stood out to me as, like, oddly different, and I couldn't exactly point out why. It was, you know, it evoked some strong emotions. You know, this girl is in what she's going through, and then you see this her sitting in this big open field. But it's apparently an homage or homage, however you say that. Is there a consensus on that, by the way?
Homage sounds French.
Homage, homage. I hear people legitimately say homage, and I always thought it was homage. I've always said homage.
Homage.
But then I hear people legitimately say...
Homme du fromage.
Anyways, not important, but it's I'm going to just use the way I've always said homage to a painting called Christina's World by Andrew Weyeth. There's a W and a Y next to each other. I don't know how to pronounce that. But yeah, look up Christina's World painting.
Oh, that painting.
Yeah, I've seen it before, too, but I didn't put it together until I looked up the trivia that there is a connection between the image in the movie and the painting, but still the image in the movie stood out to me as being somehow different from what I was seeing in the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he had this one inspiration, and then that was he used it, and that was it.
Yeah, it feels like maybe you should have thrown in a few more and also not had your poster copy ET. That keeps bugging me. I'm sorry.
Maybe it's pronounced Weath.
Weath? Andrew Weath?
Andrew Weath?
Weath. Weath.
Or Weath. This is
brilliant podcasting right here, yeah. So yeah, it's like, you almost wish the director, because so much of this film is montages.
Yep.
It doesn't really feel like there's like this driving action. It's almost like a bunch of montages and then sort of like some semi-aimless character interaction, which could, like as we said, doesn't go as deep as it should have. It lends to this feeling it kind of pastoral, I said, kind of documentary style.
You get moments of plot and then like a montage to get to the next moment of plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's so much time passing.
Yeah, you keep talking about a documentary style. I don't know
if I'm not talking about like the modern day documentary style where they put a camera in somebody's face and have them talk about something. Not like that. What I'm talking about is more like going back to Nanook of the North, where they just filmed people in situations. You know, it's like where the people back when they didn't have people talk to the camera in documentaries, they were just filming things going on. You know, that style of documentary.
Mm.
I know documentary style today means something different, and that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm not talking about, I wasn't picturing talking heads. I was picturing other stuff, but
it really feels like an indie movie in many ways.
It does. It doesn't feel like a Hollywood film, despite it being a Paramount. And
I thought you said Columbia.
Did I?
I don't know.
I don't know. Leave me alone. Look it up for your own self.
Yeah, Columbia.
Columbia. All right. So Columbia. And it was family-friendly movie. Except the opening is pretty hardcore, but...
Oh, yeah. Little girl in a hospital. It's not that graphic.
No, I mean...
Actually, like the opening car crash.
That's what I'm talking about. It's like super sad music, or more like super dramatic, like singing, and there's no sound. They're just talking. All of a sudden, the car like just destroys, and it's her being pulled from the wreckage, and it's a very sad way to open a movie.
Right, but also the cinematography of that opening sequence different from the rest of the film.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked how the movie.
I was super excited when that opening sequence happened. I was like, oh man, this isn't just going to be. I was like, oh man, this is going to be shot really well.
You know? It's like, I didn't pay attention to the cinematography, man. I forgot about it.
I was only a kid. Who pays attention to cinematography when they're a kid?
And then it was kind of average, most part.
Yeah.
It did get an Academy nomination.
Oh yeah, it did get an Academy nomination, didn't it? Wasn't it like nominated the same year as Fargo, and they both lost to this other movie that was just like, what? Why did that movie win?
The English Patient, I think.
The English Patient. That's right.
I got to double check.
Yeah, it was The English Patient it lost to. Didn't you have something to say about that, The English Patient?
Oh, no, we were just talking. I just remember it being, there was an episode of Seinfeld that hounded on it, on the movie English Patient. I think it was like talking about, I think it was an observation on like certain kind of Oscar winning movies that seem to be made to be Oscar-winning movies. And it's like, and then you forget the movie existed, like, the next year.
Right, yeah, there's tons of those where it's like, you see these movies up for Oscars, and it's like, nobody's going to remember this movie. Seriously, like, nobody's going to remember that movie, except probably the people who made it.
But I remember Fly.
They have to die one day. But a documentary about horror films... like Rob Zombie said, it's like 100 years from now. Who's going to remember the movie that like recently won an Oscar, but everyone's still going to be watching Dawn of the Dead?
Make your mark.
Every couple of years on Halloween, I watch like the old Frankenstein and Dracula, or even the silent movies, you know, like Nosferatu. It's like, yeah, there's something about, a genre work that it might not be heralded, but... It sticks with people, you know. People go back. People seek it out.
Bit of retrospective. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
So did I. Batman?
Batman, Batman. Bats fly, fly also geese. Geese also fly.
So, one of the problems I have with this movie is it seems to have a completely random supporting cast who don't that significant.
Yeah,
it's like they're just there.
Dad's girlfriend, dad's brother, and dad's glider buddy.
That's his brother.
No, the Uncle glider Dave. Buddy is not Dave. Uncle Dave helps him make sculptures.
Oh, yeah.
Glider man.
The glider buddy. Yeah.
He just pops out of nowhere and is like, hey, man, there's like some total drafts going on. We should totally go. And he's like, I can't. I got geese.
and a daughter I'm supposed to be taking care of. Is Jeff Daniels a bad dad in this film?
I feel like he's a bad dad who's trying to be better.
We're not saying he's malicious or in any way. No, he's just kind of not suited to be
a dad. Yeah,
parental.
No, which probably makes that divorce probably a smart choice.
Right.
I mean, the house he was living in still wasn't finished.
Right, and apparently it's the house that she was born in, so that was like 14 years ago.
Yeah, and he still hasn't finished it.
I know people who've lived in houses like that. I saw those plastic sheets up and some unfinished walls, and I'm like, I recognize that.
Someday, I'll finish that wall.
Right. I'll probably live in a house like that. It's just like, I'm working on it. Oh, man.
See, which is why it's a shame that they didn't focus on...
Right, because he's kind of like into his like weird hobbies, almost like a guy who's not growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like even his girlfriend who pops by and is just like, looks at him and she's just like, dude, man up and be a parent. I wonder if that relationship will last. Maybe because he's stuck with this... Yeah, it's like the only way he could connect to his daughter wasn't like in some like rational human way. It was just like, I'll help the birds migrate. So.
We'll bond over the birds. What happens when you go back? What's it going to be like then? Do you go back to being a sculptor and your daughter just goes to Canada school?
Canada school. Oh, yeah, we talked about the weirdness of being suddenly transported to another country and going as a kid and going to school, and all of a sudden you're learning a different country's history that everyone else is like, yeah, we know this stuff. This person was prime minister or whatever. And you're just like, what? This is not what I... the history... I was another country. But yeah, I'd say Jeff Daniels' character in this is a bad dad. And then he has these random people show up. It's like, this is your Uncle Dave. He's going to be watching you. I didn't tell you that. You just found him sleeping on the couch. Okay, goodbye now. And Uncle Dave is kind of creepy, isn't he?
Yeah, how he's introduced. He's like, she just dropped something on the couch. And he's like, ah! It's just there the whole time.
Yeah, and he's not wearing pants. So it's another thing.
There's a lot of things about not wearing pants in this movie.
Yeah. At one point, like when the bulldozers come, Jeff Daniels' character runs out to yell at them in his underwear.
Yeah.
And Jeff Daniels has a beard like this was an in-between movie project. You see those actors in the in-between movie beard stage? You know?
I'm so tired of shaving. I just grew this beard. With Mark Hamill being the opposite of that.
Right. Or, you know, Robin Williams, beard movie, non-beard movie, beard movie, non-beard movie. Beard, no beard, beard, no beard.
Beard, no beard, beard, mustache.
But do you connect to Anna Paquin's character? Do you find her engaging?
You know, sure. I can empathize with her. I mean, like, she's just having a good old time driving around with her mom. And then her mom's dead, and her deadbeat dad just ships her off to Canada with all his weird shit, and you're trying to adjust, and the only way you can figure it out is by taking in a family of geese.
She is kind of doing this thing where she's like just depressed and having an accent, you know?
almost trying hard to be...
Yeah, it's like she's trying not even trying to cheer up, right?
Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, you know, I've done that as a teenager. It's just like, I just want to sulk. But...
Yeah, she's hardcore sulking.
Yeah.
And then it's like something will happen and she'll just like start screaming.
Oh, yeah. She has a lot of screaming. Very high-pitched.
Yeah, like when Park Ranger tries to clip the bird's wings, you know.
She's like, him on the head.
Yeah, she hits him over the head with something. I forgot what now. Was that it?
It was a very large metal bowl with popcorn that she was sharing with the geese. And then he right. goes to clip one of the birds, and she just starts beating him with it.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. I remember that moment.
And there's a scene where she's taking a shower. Again, it's a weird scene. It was like 14-year-old girl in a shower scene in a movie. And I'm like, okay, whatever. It's not showing anything. But she goes to, there's this weird soap dispenser, and it spits the soap in her eyes. And she just starts screaming, and Mr. Absent Dad is like, has a teenage daughter. He's like, oh, what's wrong? And oh God, you're naked. And then his girlfriend has to come in and help her because he's like, I'm helpless. What do I do? So there's stuff like that where at times her, like, she objectively, she's not being rational with this whole bird thing. You know what I mean? At the same time, the movie is set up the way it is to make it seem like anyone who's trying to stop her from doing this is evil, you know?
Yeah. I think you could still do the bird thing.
Yeah.
You don't need the evil park ranger type guy who's wants to clip your geese. He breaks into your property and steals them.
And then they have to break out the geese. And there was that one goose. You remember Igor?
Igor, because he had a bum leg.
Igor with the bum leg, who actually couldn't make the flight. No. Actually rode with her in the pilot's seat, I guess.
In like a bag behind her. He did fly for a moment, but he was a dumbass and got hit by the plane.
Igor, no! And then they searched through the woods.
They were searching for him, and that's when the other geese got stolen. And there was a whole dramatic scene that was it relied on a ton of timing for them to fly over the conservation center or whatever it is, while Mr. Handsome Glider Man
and Uncle Dave
break the birds out. At the exact same time, and then they fly over the school where evil park ranger is giving a lecture.
And they fly over the Great Lakes into America.
Into America. He's like talking about where we're going. We don't have a flight plan. The other thing is like, then why didn't you? Weren't you planning this for a lot months?
Yeah, they did. We saw them make it. It's like, well, we'll stop here and this. And then all of a sudden they're taking off. It's like, we don't have a flight plan. And it's like, what do you mean by that? You've made plans.
Why didn't you cross your I's and dot your T's?
Do they mean they didn't register a flight plan officially? Like they didn't submit, this is where we're going
to
be flying?
I mean, like, was it like they'd have to be like, we don't have pilot's license. Is that the kicker?
They probably didn't. Does the 14-year-old girl have a pilot's license all
Absolutely
of a sudden?
Not. Do you need one for a craft that small?
I don't know. Do you?
Maybe.
It's got an engine on it.
It does.
That probably counts for something. That's probably in the codes or laws
codes
somewhere.
Of things.
It's a flying thing with an engine on it, so maybe you need a pilot's license. But anyways, yeah, I guess I think Anna Paquin and Jeff Daniels lack a father-daughter chemistry on screen. But that kind of works to the advantage of that they're not connecting.
Right. Yeah.
That they are incompatible. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Totally different personalities. And the film does make room for you to feel for both of them. And the idea that they want to connect, you know, their lives have been thrown out of whack by this event of, you know, the mother dying, but they're not blaming each other for that. You know what I mean? There's never that scene where it's like, I was doing fine and then you showed up here. Now I've got to take care of you. And it's like, maybe we could have had that scene and maybe that would have been interesting, but that's not what this film was going for.
Damn it. Now I got to be a dad.
So the film still works on many levels. I wish the struggle between if there had been maybe you did remake this and you found an actor for the father and an actress for the young girl who had a good on screen chemistry that worked for that dynamic that would allow you to have a deeper drama there. As it is, it feels like there's her and there's him. It's like, are there even that many scenes where they're in the same frame, you know? It's kind of like watching two paralleling stories. It's like there's his character and what he's going through, and there's her character and what she's going through. And then there's geese everywhere. Which, by the way, you realize what a problem it would be when it's like you see the baby geese and the just the poop everywhere.
Oh, yeah. It's on the table.
Yeah, and the geese were in the house.
I'm just thinking about, like, the geese are all cuddling with her. Everything was like, you're going to wake up with poop all over.
Yep, that's the end result of that. So, Lucas, there's only one question left to ask, really.
What, Dave?
How does this film compare to Birdemic?
It's leagues above Birdemic. Come on, man. This movie was way more subtle in its environmental message than Birdemic was.
Are you sure? This is yeah. As heavy-handed as this is, Birdemic's just like completely transparent. It's more than transparent. It's more. It's actually like poking you. This film is transparent. Birdemic is like poking you with its message.
The geese aren't also trying to kill her out of revenge for the environment.
Would that have made a better movie?
Would that have just been birds, but with geese?
It's Jeff Daniels and Anna Paquin held up in this house, and the birds are trying to get in, you know?
Ego, no!
And maybe you could have found a use for that metal dragon. It's like, drop the metal dragon on the birds! And that's how they bond. Surviving the birds. And with that, I think we should call it a night.
Time to make a wrap. All right, Jellyheads. Thanks for listening to this episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In. We have been your hosts, Luke and...
Dave.
If you enjoyed this episode, may I suggest you go to our website at psychojellyfish.com to find this and other podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Please rate and review. It really does help out the show. If you're a fan, you want to help spread the madness, give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter at Jellycast. Thoughts, words, comments, or questions, please leave it in the comments section. It's been a fun one, folks.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho. Another perfect clap.
Are you going to go into 90s guy again?
Yeah. You know what we're doing tonight is what we're listening to.
You can't keep it up, can you?
Hey there, kids. We're getting there with the No U-Turns at the Drive-In. We're literally super cool. Wow.
What would you say is the, like, basis of your 90s guy?
Half radio DJ, half Rich from Red Letter Media.
Okay.
Fly away him.
Cartman? Was that Cartman?
Fly away him. Go for him.